4 new coronavirus cases in the NBA, including Kevin Durant, and it's Jaylen Brown Day on the Wednesday Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This is the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Wednesday, and we're marching along with our player in deep dives today, Jaylen Brown. And joining me today to talk about this, Chris Grenham of Forbes. Chris, how you doing?
Chris, how's it going, man? How's your quarantine?
Good. You know, actually, you know, I'll be honest with you, this might actually be good for me.
This is actually a positive thing.
This is actually going to be a positive development. Like, I'm eating food that I cook. So it's like not a lot of processed stuff. I'm not living on the road. I'm sleeping more than I have in a long time.
That was the first thing I noticed. I've been sleeping more than I have in the last 3 years, like way more. So that's a huge positive. That's
not
a big positive.
Not being up till 3 a.m.
Yeah. Those are your hours during the season. You're the probably the biggest night owl on the beat. You get that second wind and you thrive late.
Oh, for sure. I come in hard for a landing about 2:45. but I definitely am fine with the later hours. But with nothing to kind of keep my attention, I'm going to bed a little earlier usually. And, you know, I can't get to the gym, but I'm running a little bit more.
I'm getting some miles in. A lot too. Yeah, it's good. It's good. There are silver linings here.
It's funny that if you are a traveling beat reporter, not traveling, it's like, oh, I've got kind of like, this is actually not bad. So it's
somewhat of a normal lifestyle.
Yeah. So for me, in this, like, if I'm looking for a silver lining and trying to have fun with a very serious topic, I'm like, oh, okay, this is actually going to be healthy for me.
This is actually good.
Yeah. So I understand, like, so this is obviously still a very serious topic. And I always want to preface all of this by saying, I know that this is all very serious. And I don't want to be like flippant about it, but we're also trying to have some fun and kind of keep the conversation a little bit light. But there are serious things, including 4 Brooklyn Nets. It was announced by the Nets on Tuesday. 4 Brooklyn Nets testing positive, and it came out that Kevin Durant is one of them. And it turns out that it was reported that after they came back from San Francisco, they decided they paid for private COVID-19 testing. And they got these results. So I don't know. This is like the first NBA player that that isn't tied to playing against Rudy Gobert.
Right.
So
I think that's like time. It's time for us to, if there are still people on Twitter or in the NBA sphere somewhere kind of blaming Rudy as patient zero, I think it's time we can kind of wash that away. Like, hopefully he can kind of like push that aside, because I think that's kind of an unfair thing that a lot of people pinned on him at the start of this.
I also think it was kind of, he pinned it on himself.
Yeah.
By being a bit of a dick about it.
Yes. Like, yes, that's
like,
fair.
If he just became like, he was just the first guy that was tested positive, you're like, oh, okay, well, we've got a guy.
That's very true. It didn't help him, you know, rubbing hands all over microphones and kind of messing around and not really taking it seriously. Yeah.
If he was just normal guy testing positive and he didn't have all that, then none of this would really be a big deal.
But totally fair, because he brought a lot of it on himself
because he didn't take it seriously, and because he had that video.
Yeah,
it's like, oh well, you know, screw you, Rudy. And you know what? And that I think is earned. He earned that. Like, he doesn't deserve like vitriol. Like, he wasn't being malicious about it. He's not a bad person for it. But like,
totally. But he really didn't handle.
He didn't do
it well whatsoever. Yeah,
any favors. So, but I found it interesting that they were in San Francisco and then all these guys tested positive. San Francisco is like the hot spot in the United States. Like, they are in shelter in place. Yeah. So it just highlights, I think, the be careful where you go. Who knows if Durant was out in San Francisco and you just don't know who's carrying it. And you don't know, like, the scariest part Chris, is that three of these guys are asymptomatic. You right. just don't know if you have it.
Yeah, that's the scariest part about this whole thing, in my opinion. And talking with my friends and stuff, a lot of people, when this whole thing started, you know, people are finding out they're going to be working from home for 6 weeks and that sort of thing. So the first thought in their mind for, you know, a 25-year-old guy in Boston is, well, maybe I'll go home and see my parents for a week.
Right.
It's like, well, no, because I could be carrying this thing, especially like for me, my concern was initially I was like, yeah, maybe I'll go home and see my parents. But we were with the Jazz that Friday night. So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, maybe I could be showing no symptoms. You could be showing no symptoms. That's mm-hmm. the scariest part of this whole thing. You could be going to the grocery store and you could just go to, I don't know, grab a bag of lettuce and then you could give it to some poor 80-year-old who comes over and is using the same section right after you. That's without question the scariest part. And definitely that was kind of the thing that stuck out to me about this Nets news too, is that three of those four guys were showing no symptoms too.
So that's a scary thing and a yeah. good reminder that anybody can be a carrier. So yep. don't think, I had a conversation with my best friends today, just because you feel good and you're not, just don't think that you're going to be okay. And that's all that matters. You could be a right. carrier. So, and now the other thing is that the NBA, it was announced by Adrian Wojnarowski, is planning to essentially double its credit line from $650 million to $1.2 billion. And this is, I think, significant. I'm not 100% sure what exactly it's going to allow them to do, mm-hmm. other than, as Woj said, allow the league to increase cash flow through what's expected to be an extended shutdown of the season. That I don't know if this means you're just going to pay like coaches and executives, and you know, Brad Stevens is still going to get his paycheck and
right.
so on and so forth. But like also, I don't, how much does this impact? Is this going to impact the salary cap? Are they going to try to use this as a way to mitigate some of the salary cap impact? Because just from a pure basketball perspective, Chris, we were looking at $115 million, and
right.
that could be down. What if that goes down to $100 million as a salary cap next season? Teams essentially lose a major, like $15 million that you could have had to pay a player is gone if you
yeah.
had that space.
It's insane. The business aspect of this and the financial impacts that are going to be had for the next couple months are going to be fascinating to watch. Obviously, like you said, this credit line jump is massive. I mean, moving from $650 million to $1.2 billion, that is a huge jump. So it is going to be interesting to see like what that really means, because, yeah, we can tell that's a lot of money. That's a big increase. But what does that necessarily mean each team is going to do? What are they going to use that for? There's a variety of ways they could. I think there's a lot of, like you said, whether it be front office guys, coaches getting their full salary, whether that helps them kind of hold up their G League franchises too, because obviously now we know that the G League guys are going to get paid through the remainder of their seasons. And like Woj pointed out the other day, when him and Malika Andrews, I think it was, broke that story, G League, they suck money out of NBA franchises to begin with. And so now the fact that they're not going to bring in any revenue for the remainder of their seasons and they're still going to get paid out, I'm sure that's going to come into play with this too. But the financial edge of this is just going to be pretty fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be like, we've been so focused, rightfully so, on the immediate impact. Like, when are the games coming back?
You know, right.
People like, are you healthy? Who's testing positive? And, you know, just from a selfish perspective, like you said, I was there when the Jazz were here. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for me? And we're very short-term focused, because that's what you have to be in a situation like this. But
right.
from a bigger picture business perspective, the long-term impact is going to be huge. Now, I talked about this. I just finished recording the Locked On NBA podcast with Jake Madison. I got into this conversation with him as well. So go ahead and subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast. I do the Wednesday show. We're going to continue doing the Wednesday show throughout this hiatus. We'll figure out topics for the full NBA as we continue to navigate these really uncertain waters. So subscribe and get a lot more on the league as far as what they might be doing on the Locked On NBA podcast. Now up next, we'll have our in-depth conversation about Jaylen Brown, what we thought coming into the season, what he did this season, and then moving forward, what he needs to do to get better. Stick around. That's coming up right after this.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
We're doing these kind of in order, I think, of what the biggest story is this year. So we started off this week with Jason Tatum because of the leap. Then Kemba Walker because Kemba's new, and he's, I think, been at the center of so much of that's gone well, just for the simple fact that he is unselfish and has kind of allowed through his step back these guys to take their steps forward. Jaylen Brown is among them, and I don't know about, like, coming into this season, I had my opinion, which I've gotten roasted for, but you know, you have your opinions going into the season. What can a guy be? And I thought, you know, I see Jaylen Brown as basically a high-end role player. I kind of compared him to the Andre Iguodalas of the world. When you thought about him coming into this season, what was your kind of take about what he could be as a player?
I mean, I think people will hear high-end role player and think that's almost like an insult. But
yes,
I think that's it.
Did.
I think that, yeah, and that people will, I'm sure people ran with that. But I think that's an accurate, like, portrayal. I mean, he averaged, what, 13-4 last year in 74 games. And he was behind Kyrie and behind Tatum. And this year coming in, you're expecting him to be that third guy, which he still kind of is, behind Tatum and Kemba. So a high-end role player isn't necessarily an insult to Jaylen Brown's game. I think that's where he fit. And I think he was very good as it fitting that mold. You know what I mean? I also don't think many people, whether they'll tell you it or not at this point, many people expected him to make this kind of jump. Because Tatum, of course, has, like you said, it's been the leap. Like, he has made improvements within a season that just are not supposed to happen. Like, he has obviously taken the headlines with that. But Jaylen Brown's jump, whether it be ball handling, whether it be – there is a myriad of improvements that he has made. But coming into this season, to answer your question, I think a high-end role player, someone who's vital to this team but is essentially a role guy, is, yeah, that's probably what he would have been labeled as. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, so and you can almost argue that that's still what he is, but, like,
right,
the extreme high end of that.
But, right, the high-end role player who could potentially work his way into the All-Star conversation like he did, like that high end.
Right. And it's – I don't want to, like – I don't want to put him in these boxes, but that's what we do. We kind,
right,
of, like, try to we try to assess what these guys are going to be. And the – so if Tatum is the star player, what make – and we, this was a good conversation before – the season started, and as the season was going, when we were having the All-Star conversation, it was like, pick one. Who would it be? Now, I picked Jaylen up until, like, right before they made the selection. There was those few weeks where Jaylen kind of got hurt and he kind of dipped a little bit, and Tatum was making a little bit of a jump. Up until then, I was like, I'm still kind of team Jaylen on if I had to pick one, because he was so efficient early on. But the argument was, hey, Tatum has to do so much more. He's out there creating a lot,
yeah,
of his own,
right,
offense, whereas Jaylen is kind of assisted on a lot of his offense, which is, again, it's not an insult to say these things.
Right.
That's just how the puzzle pieces fit.
It's just the way it works. I mean, he more so than anyone benefits from that balanced offense. Like, he has made incredible improvements in the last year, but you have to note that Kyrie leaving created a more balanced offensive system. And Jaylen, I think, probably more than anyone, was the beneficiary of that. He, like you said, Tatum's out there creating on his own. He's creating his own shot more. Jaylen is on the side benefiting from, you know, certain half courts. He benefits from that balanced offensive set. And so I think that, again, people will take that as an insult, like you said, but it's really not. And I think it's more so like a testament to what a perfect fit he is in this system and what a perfect fit he is with this team. And also another addition to the list, to the long list of why Kemba was the perfect quote unquote star point guard that this team kind of needed, because he's perfect alongside Jalen.
Yes. Yes. So Jalen spent a lot of this season, like part of why he broke through some of the things that we were thinking, like, so go back to the beginning of the season and he's coming off a year. Like, people like to think that last year, Jason Tatum had a step backwards where I don't think he did. He just didn't take a big step forward like people expected.
Right.
I think Jalen was both the guy who took a little bit of a step back, but also who navigated all of that stuff last year, maybe better than anybody, because he willingly accepted that step back going to the bench. That worked out perfectly for him. This year, he kind of broke through a lot of that stuff by tightening up a lot of the things that he was not doing well. The one thing I kept harping on, and this goes along with that tightened handle of his, like to be a better ball handler opens up so much more that you're able to do. I think the first 2.5 years or so, Jaylen Brown was, well, he was a lot like Jason Tatum in the first couple months of the season, where he could drive, he could attack, but he had like one speed and it was flying into the teeth of the defense.
Yeah.
And I'm either going to dunk on you or I'm going to challenge you. This is it. I'm challenging the defense. What changed at the end of last year, and especially the beginning of this year, is how he varies that attack. The way he attacks the basket now, I think, is beautiful. I think it's a great change of speed, change of direction, better ball handling, a move and a counter move, a little bit of work in the post, a little bit of that fadeaway jumper in the middle of the lane. That stuff is so huge when it comes to him. Because a lot of times when he's catching the ball, he doesn't initiate the offense. He gets the ball off of Kemba or Tatum or Hayward. Like, that's what he does. He catches the ball on the move, often when the defense is either in rotation or switching, and he can take advantage of these little openings, and that's where he's particularly deadly. And that's, I think, his greatest improvement, and why he was a borderline all-star and why he can be an all-star in the future, is that he now has moves and counter moves, and he knows how to vary that attack at the rim, and he can now score from 15 feet in much, much better than he has at any point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, his finishing package as a whole is completely different. Like you said, at the beginning of his career and even last year, when he would drive – and he's going to the hoop, he's got his head down and he's just kind of barreling through the lane, and he's, I got to finish at the rim and there's no other option really. And now he's shooting 10 to 16 feet in that range. He was shooting, at least as of a couple weeks ago, he was shooting just over 50%. And I think a lot of that extra finishing ability, whether it's, you know, a mid-range shot, whether it's that patience around the foul line to then make another move and then go to the hoop, I think a lot of that has to do with his court vision. I think his court vision has dramatically improved. Again, it comes back to when he was coming out of Cal. He was that raw athletic kid who, was a tremendous athlete. He was quick, but he was so raw. And he wasn't really able to finish all that well, kind of similar to Tatum. And he could not put the ball on the floor, you know, kind of confidently, I guess you could say, because he was all over the place when he put the ball on the floor. Now, he's got the court vision. He's got the tight handle. He's patient. He can shoot mid-range, and he's confident in pulling up around the free throw line. His finishing package it's vastly different than what it was. So in terms of, you know, defending him, you don't really know what he's going to do. And he tackles mismatches probably better than anyone in that wing group that the Celtics have. They all do relatively well. They're all long. They're all around the same size. But at 6'6", 223. Jalen's actually, he's pretty strong. So he's also got the versatility where he can go inside and he can battle with a four more so than someone like Tatum can. So back to your original point, I think a lot of it comes down to his court vision, because having that court vision and kind of knowing that he doesn't just have to put the blinders on and barrel in at the rim opens everything up. It allows him to be more patient, which then allows him to create those lateral quick moves, but also they're methodical and they're well thought out. And I think just that court vision, and really it's an evolution of his basketball IQ, and that's expected in his fourth year. But I think it all kind of came together this year at once, which is why he made that leap, which is getting overlooked a little bit because of Tatum's leap, but it's been really, really impressive and pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Here's the stat that you were, I think, referring to. 8 to 16 feet last season, the 18-19 season, 8 to 16 yeah. feet, 42.1%. This season, 8 to 16 feet, 51%.
Yeah, there it is. That's a huge jump.
That's that 10% jump, basically, in that range is just massive.
It's huge.
Because and the ability, that's a playoff type shot. Mm-hmm. That's a shot where in the playoffs you're not going to get all the way to the rim. In the playoffs you're going to have to figure out, like, people crap all over the mid-range shot, and mid-range shots are inefficient unless you can hit them efficiently. And that 8 to 16 feet at 51%, that's the number you need to be at,
yeah,
to be able to take that shot with regularity, and the quote unquote analytics don't apply. That's a good shot. That's going to be a shot that teams give up. That's a shot that the Milwaukee Bucks in their defense don't get to the rim, like, let you have some of the threes, but if they run you off the line, that's a shot that you're going to get. 16 footers, 14 footers, 12 footers. When you're attacking and the teeth of the defense are, it's a front line of the Lopez twins and Giannis. You better hit that 8 to 16 footer.
Yeah, because you're not getting to the rim.
You're not getting all the way to the rim.
Yeah, no shot. I think also it's amazing that if I were to have told you at the beginning of the year that he was going to be better in the 8 to 16 feet range than 8 to 16 foot range than Hayward, because that's kind of Hayward's
like, money.
Bread and butter. And the fact that Hayward is 50.4, so Jalen's got a little bit better percentage than him right there. I mean, that's incredible. I would have never thought that Jalen would have made that jump. And it's huge. It's opened up his entire game.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because, and I've said it a million times, but I'll say it again, I consider that shot to be kind of a body blow. Because they take away the shots at the rim. They take away your three-pointers, and they give you that shot. If you can hit that shot at a clip like this, and why it's so important, why I call it a playoff shot, if you can hit that regular, then that's a killer. That's like hitting a three. You're hitting that at enough of a point where you're scoring enough points where it counts the same as if you were taking threes at the league average. Go ahead.
No, against a team like the Bucks and even the Sixers, like, that's a shot they're going to give you.
Right.
And so body blow is like a perfect phrase for that. You're right. If you can hit that consistently, and if you have guys like Hayward and Brown who can hit that consistently, that is massive over the course of a 7-game series. Just that's unbelievable.
Right. And then what ends up happening? You hit that shot with enough regularity, inevitably someone on the defense feels like, God, I got to take that away.
They got to creep up. Yeah.
That shot is killing us.
Right.
And if that shot is killing you, and Lopez takes one of the Lopez's take a couple of steps forward, then what happens? That opens up a little bit of a driving lane. That opens up a backdoor cut. That opens up so many other little things that all of a sudden, it's, like I said, the body blow. It lowers the gloves that were up protecting the face. If you've got to protect that body, then next thing you know, that headshot is open. And that's how boxing matches are won. That's how knockouts happen. And it's that slow progression. Brad would call it hitting singles. Those singles.
Brad loves those baseball references.
He loves hitting singles. He loves hitting singles. But that's the single right there. You string five of those singles together, you've scored a couple of runs. And that's what opens things up in a playoff where a lot of things are kind of taken away, whistles are swallowed, and you have to kind of dive into those mid-range shots. So that fadeaway, that shot that he got, what was the overtime game where he hit the game winner? Who was that against? The game-tying shot where they missed the free throw. Why am I drawing a blank on that? That was very recent too.
Let me show where the against
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Jeez.
Was it Brooklyn?
I think it was the Brooklyn game. Because they blew it, and then they missed the free throw to tie it up, and then they lost in the overtime because.
Where are you talking about the game? This is great radio. Where are you talking about the game where he hit the? It was the three off the missed.
Yes. Was that Brooklyn?
I don't think so, because Brooklyn, I was down.
Was that Houston?
I was up in the halo for the game where he hit the game tying one, and I was down for the Brooklyn game.
Oh. Well, whatever it was, I'm drawing a complete blank.
Yeah. Everyone knows what we're talking about.
Jeez, this is awesome radio.
What was the last time we were at the – it feels like we were at the Garden 3 years ago, so it was a long time ago.
It's been like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It feels like. But then he had that shot in the OT to go
for the win. It was Houston.
That was the Houston game?
It was Houston,
That was the fadeaway that's the shot we're talking about.
Right.
Fadeaway shot, where it's the shot that he's been hitting
exactly
a lot. So anyway, I think that more than anything, and then one other shot that I think has been huge for him, his 3-point shooting has been really good this year. The last season, let me give you this season, because the corner three has been big for him. The corner three, left corner, 45.5%. Right corner, 48.6%. Last season, he had some weird struggles in the right corner where he was 27.5%. So that's another huge step. Being able to catch and shoot and hit those corner threes has been just massive, because that's the thing that you talk about, playing off of Kemba, playing off of Tatum.
Right.
When those guys get blitzed, being able to hit that shot makes it less likely for them to help off of you. To like, if you're on that same side and you set up where a guy has to make a decision, and if Kemba's driving or Jason's driving and they just sag off of you just a little too much, hitting that catch and shoot three at the clip that he's hitting it, over 45% on both sides, that's just... That's a killer shot. That right there, you're talking about the knockout blow. The mid-range shot is the body blow. This is the knockout punch right there, because now all of a sudden the defense is sagged in, and if you're hitting those corner threes, that piles up real fast.
Yeah, and also the fact that Kemba and Tatum can be confident to kick it out to him and know that he's going to hit that is huge too, because they can confidently drive in and kick out to the lane. And I'm looking right now, he has 52 field goals that were assisted by Kemba and 43 from Tatum. Those are the top two out of anyone on the team. So it's clear that they're the ones that are feeding him, especially in those corner shots. So yeah, those are massive. And yeah, that's the knockout blow.
All right. Let's look at the things that he's done well. Now we'll take a quick break and say, what can he fix? What can he do better to take another step forward? I want to remind you that Postmates is giving you $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days if you download the Postmates app for a limited time. Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for the first 7 days if you use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. So start your free deliveries, download the app, and use code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So JB has had a fantastic season. If the regular season ends now, this was, I mean, obviously it's the best season of his career, but the leap forward that he's taken has been phenomenal. He's averaging 20.4 points per game, which is huge. He's third in the team in scoring. He's grabbing 6.4 rebounds. That's 2.2 more than last year. 2.2 assists. That's almost a full assist more. He's got more steals, an extra turnover, but that goes with the higher usage. His shooting is way up, 49% overall field goal percentage, 38% from three, which is the second best of his career and just a fantastic number. Overall, just, and let's see, 73.5% from the line. For a guy that came into the season shooting about 65, 66%, for him to come in and shoot almost 74% from the free throw line is a huge improvement. But there are still things that he can do better. And I think for Brown, the number one thing that still, I think, plagues him is inside his own head. And I think the number one thing that he needs to really focus on is keeping his focus on the floor, because there are still, I think, too many times where he looks either lost or, for lack of a better term, he spaces out. You can kind of see that 100-yard stare, as it's called, or whatever, that kind of looking into nothingness. And I remember a few games where people were like pointing at him to tell him where to go on the offense, where it's like, you know where to go. He knows how to play. He knows this offense. But there are still times where he just zones out. And he, I think, first and foremost, needs to find a way when he's on the court to stay in the moment. And another Bradism, make the next right play. That I think if he can focus on that, letting mistakes get past him, whatever's happening off the court or wherever's going on in his head, if he can focus on what's happening in front of him, then he's got a lot more room to have to eliminate a lot of the lapses that still plague his game.
Yeah, I think he's done a good job of controlling that a little more this year.
Sure.
We saw him go through it in the beginning of early January. What would happen a lot in the last couple of years, again, less so this year, but it happened again in early January, is those lapses that you're talking about, they kind of tend to string together for him.
Yes.
Where it becomes this consistent lapse for whether it's a week, whether it's three games, whatever it is, they would string together. And he'd get caught in that tunnel. And I'm looking just after the first week of January, he had kind of a rough patch against Philly. He had 6 points. Pelicans, he had 13 points. Chicago, he had 19 points, but kind of a choppy game. Like, it would string together like that. So if, say, he does still fall into that lapse, because over the course of an NBA schedule, that's going to happen. You know, it's just bound to. Your goal is to limit that, but it's going to happen if, for his sake and the Celtics, obviously, you can limit that from then running into the next game and the next game after that, and even potentially the following one. That is what I think is really key. And like you said, it's about making that, it's very, very much a Bradism, but making that next right play. It even kind of falls into making that next right play and then leaving everything else behind and leaving everything in your, you know, if you fall into it for one game, leaving that game behind and moving on to the next. That's been difficult for him in the past, more so than it is, I think, other guys. I think if he can leave some of those games in the past and just jump right to the next one, that will help him immensely. But again, he's been very, very good this year compared to last year and the year before about jumping out of those lapses. They've been shorter stints than they have been in years past, in my opinion.
For sure, for sure. And it's something that obviously he knows he has to work through.
Yeah.
He's a young kid, you know, 23 years old.
He's still 23. It's outrageous that
Right. So there's still so much growth to his game. He is a thoughtful guy. He is, I think his mind is very active. And the one thing coaches say is if you're thinking out there, you're dead.
Right.
That's, You have to be reacting. Now, that's not necessarily like universally true. Like you have to, like, as the team is bringing the ball up, you can be thinking about, what do you see? Where are these guys going? Who's on the floor? What do they tend to do? Once the play starts to happen, you are reacting.
Yeah, it's pure reactionary.
And if you aren't, if you're still thinking, or if your mind is like, oh, I can't believe I missed that shot, or I can't believe I turned the ball over, or if you're saying to yourself, come on, Jalen, you're better than this.
Right.
That's where the backdoor cuts happen. That's where the lapses go, and you don't switch when you're supposed to switch, or, you know, you didn't rotate, or you're caught too deep. Like, those mistakes really, like you said, they pile up, and it really hurts on the defensive end. Like,
right.
That's where he can really, really be a detriment. When it's almost like when that's happening, you don't, like, maybe you pull him out and, like, okay, snap back into this.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, you got to focus. Whatever it's a word, whether they hypnotize them, something, like, there's got to be a, hey, buddy, like, you got to get your head back into this. Because
right.
when he's focused and reacting, he can be extraordinarily good.
Yeah. I think what you noted about the defensive end is really important, because that is where the lapses really do hurt. Because especially with this year's team, they're balanced enough where they have other options at the wing. You know, if he's in a lapse, they could turn to Hayward, they could turn to Tatum, whatever. Defensively, his versatility is so important.
Yes.
And especially if it's down the stretch where they need him to battle with a four on the other team, something like that. He's strong enough where he can do that, but they rely on that so heavily, especially in important games against bigger teams like the Bucks, even against the Sixers. They do rely on his versatility defensively a lot. And so when he goes through these lapses, he can get beat pretty easily. He's shown to be, you know, beaten pretty easily defensively. And that's where the problems really, really pile up for this team.
Yeah. So on top of that, there are still things that he can do a little bit better. I like where he is, though. Like, I like totally. His offensive game. So, like, his ball handling can still be a little bit better. His free throw shooting, like, maybe he can find a way to get to the line a little bit more. I think his ability to pass is something that he needs to work on. Like, the drives that he has, like, when he gets stuck, like, the ability to kind of read and then read that second line of the defense. So once you get past your guy, there's that first line of the defense where you're like, okay, if he does this, I got that option. But, like, if he does this, then that guy's going to do this. So I'm going to set up the other guy in the other corner by attacking that second guy. Like, I think sometimes, like, the best of the best, the person who's in front of him almost doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. They're thinking past him.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
That's once the defender who's on me, like, I don't care about him at all, because I've already got, once that person's on me, I've got him beat. I know how to beat that guy. How am I
right.
going to beat the next guy? And when you can beat the next guy, that opens up the whole world, because now that's, you know, what, 40% of the defense you've got in the palm of your hands. And if you can be like the puppet master, be like, all right, once I beat this guy, I'm going to do this to this guy. And now that's going to open up this other pass, because I know they're going to pinch in, and that this high opposite pass can open up. Like, that type of stuff is the elite level stuff.
It's like that second tier of court vision. You know, we were talking about the development of his court vision before, which has been tremendous over the last 3 years-ish, 4 years, but it's that second tier that somehow Tatum has already begun to develop immensely over the last couple months. But it's that next tier that really separates guys in the offensive end. So we'll see, but you're right. That's definitely something that would really, really open up his offensive game nicely.
So that, I think, and I think he's got, like, another level. Like, but now I guess I can take this opportunity to maybe reassess what I think his ceiling is, even though
right.
I know that his ceiling that can change. Is high end role player still something that applies to him? My fear, if I'm going to express a fear, is that someday, I don't want to use names because I don't want to say I think he's going to be Harrison Barnes.
Right.
But, like, I do have a fear that he might end up going down a Harrison Barnes path where he's a huge part of a very, very good team. And in this mix of being a huge part of a very good team, teams are going to be like, hey, you're number three in Boston, but we want you to be our number one. And then
yeah.
he goes somewhere to be a number one, and they're like, oh, why did we pay this guy all this money?
Right.
Now, he could end up being a number one guy. He could end up being good enough. Like, if he does the things that we're saying, I think then he becomes a next level type of player. But I don't know, like, can he be the number one guy on a team? Or is he still like a number two or number three guy? I still feel like, especially on this team with Tatum, I still think he's going to be behind Tatum. But
definitely. It's so tough to tell in a group like this, you know?
It is.
Like, it's so difficult to, but I think you're right. I think he's pretty much solidified, at least after watching the jump that Tatum's taken. I think he's pretty much solidified himself behind him, at least.
Yeah. And
right.
At that point, what I don't want for him is to get caught up in this.
Like, yeah.
And honestly, like, here I am talking about it on a podcast. Like, he should not be listening to people like me.
Right.
Like, he's
hey, man, he's quarantined. He's got a lot of free time on his hand. This is dangerous. He could be listening right now.
I don't know. I don't know who listens. I don't know if any of the people, like, friends of his or family or whatever,
right.
people, stuff that happens in the media gets around to guys.
And yeah.
so, like, I always have to preface this by saying, like, I think he's, I always thought that he was going to have, like, a long, like, 15-year great
solid
NBA
consistent career.
Yeah. Like the type of career that very, very few people have,
right.
that when you look back on it, it's going to be a career that people are like, wow, that was a really good career. Now, the question is, does he end up having a really nice career, or does he end up having a Hall of Fame career? Does
right.
he end up having, like, does he make another jump forward? Like, Tatum, I sit there and I say, that kid's going to have a Hall of Fame career.
Mm-hmm.
I think that someday I'm going to be covering his enshrinement into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Will I be doing the same for Jaylen Brown? And obviously it's way, way, way too early. But I think that if I'm projecting it out, that I don't know. I don't know if he reaches that level. But can he be like a guy that maybe you have a debate about, or you're like, eh, not a Hall of Famer, but still one hell of a career. Like, that's still going to be a guy who makes $300 million and or whatever it is and has a very nice life and is set and can do all of the other things that he wants to do.
Totally. And he'll find his way onto a couple all-star teams here. I have no doubt at some point. He's already made a nice jump this year, but you're right. It's tough to tell at this point. I think in between those two levels, that potential Hall of Famer or – you know, the tier below that, I think he could find his way somewhere in between that. Again, this is all quarantine speculation,
right,
but
right.
I think, but again, he is certainly, and I think we are very much in agreement on this, he is off to a tremendous, tremendous start and much better than I thought after watching. I thought he was going to take longer to develop when the Celtics drafted him than he has.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely.
I think it's
so
fair.
That's kind of where I stand.
Like, I can see Tatum being an MVP. Can I see Brown being an MVP right now? I don't know. If I had to pick yes or no, I'd say no. But
me too.
But if he had, let's say he had an MVP season, I wouldn't sit there and be like, oh my God, this is so shocking. I don't expect it. But if he makes certain improvements, you never know.
Yeah, and a lot of it's because of the group he's in. It's, you know, a lot of it's because he's around Tatum. It's tough for his role to push into that MVP tier when he's with Tatum, when he's with Kemba. So, yeah, we don't really know. We're not really sure.
But either way, still think he's got definitely a few things to improve on. And at least he's like, look, he's locked in. He's making money. He's ready to kind of be a part of this future. And we'll see what happens with his next contract. But, like, I enjoy having him around. I think he's a very thoughtful young man.
Yep.
I
think his style, I think he fits perfectly with this group, particularly this year as well.
He's a great fit.
Yeah.
I like what he's pursuing off the court. I think he's very thoughtful. I think he's been fantastic throughout this coronavirus scare, like being very responsible.
His Instagram Live was so perfectly timed.
Yeah.
Like that before all the Rudy Gobert stuff happened, he had a very, very thoughtful Instagram Live kind of discussing coronavirus, discussing the concerns around it, why we should be concerned. And it was perfectly timed. I thought it was really thoughtful, but it's that kind of thing that is promising about him.
I want to make sure that this is included in this because it's an important part. And I think this is an important part for him because we're sitting here, it's a basketball podcast. We talk basketball. Right. But he maybe more than anybody on the team outwardly is pushing, like, I'm a person. I'm not just a basketball player. I have these thoughts. I want bigger things than just basketball. Now, part of it is building a brand, and that's what they do. That's what kids in the NBA do nowadays. You build brands.
Right.
Also, he is very conscious. He is trying to break stereotypes. I think he's very conscious of the stereotype of the young black athlete. Mm-hmm. And he wants to break those stereotypes of being a guy that, hey, I came from Atlanta. I came from a situation that maybe wasn't the best. Single mom and, you know, could have gotten into some things and basketball kind of got me out. But because basketball got me out doesn't mean that's all I am.
Right.
He wants to be seen at Harvard. He wants to be seen at MIT. He wants to be a role model. He was talking about equality in the education system. All of that stuff is very important. And I think as part of the bigger picture of who Jaylen Brown is, like to have a guy like that on this team is also important to the city, you know, like to have a guy that is very focused on that kind of stuff is important to have in the community. All of these Celtics, all of these athletes do a lot of great things in the community for sure. Jaylen, that's his thing. And more importantly than can he be an MVP? Can he be a Hall of Fame guy? What's he going to be? I think his most important contribution to the city of Boston is he's out there trying to make a difference, and he might be the guy that inspires young boys and girls, especially young boys and girls of color, to be things that maybe they didn't think they could be.
Right. That's what I was going to say. From a role model standpoint, I mean, it doesn't really get much better than Jaylen right now. I mean, talk about a well-rounded young – at 23 years old, nonetheless, a well-rounded athlete. I mean, just a tremendous person, well-spoken. He knows that there is things beyond basketball. He knows that basketball isn't his end game, which I think is extremely important. And like we've said, extremely important for kids that are looking up to him and even fans to know that there are – it's not all just basketball here. There's bigger things, and he's used his platform as well as anyone. It's really great.
Yeah, like role model is a good way to put it. Like he's a guy – like not all athletes are role models. But he is a guy that I can see having a long-term impact in the community – both here in Boston, back home in Atlanta, and being a guy that I think young kids at some point will look back and be like, you know what, Jaylen Brown made a difference in my life, which is going to be the most important thing that he does in the grand scheme of things.
100%.
On top of him being a very, very good basketball player, which gives him that platform. So it's kind of like added inspiration for him to like be even better at basketball, because the better he is at basketball, the more opportunity he has to speak out on these things.
Right. The bigger that platform becomes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it goes hand in hand. I'm glad that he's got that opportunity. I'm very impressed by him in that regard. So I feel like the story of Jaylen Brown has to include that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because it's vital to who he is, and it's vital to where he currently is in his career. It's impressive. And that portion is continuing to grow too, which is just as important.
All right, everybody, go check out Chris Grenham's stuff on Forbes. We're all going to be trying to figure out a way to create content over the course of the next 7 or 8 weeks. Hopefully basketball comes back soon and we can get back to the X's and O's of it. But Locked On Celtics will still be here, so please subscribe. You got ideas for ways to carry us through this entire hiatus. So the plan is to still do podcasts. The tone will change, things will change, but still basketball. And we'll still be here for you free daily, Monday through Friday. So subscribe, give that good 5-star rating, a good written review. Really appreciate all those. That's the show. I want to thank everybody again. And now, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On Fantasy Basketball.